Next is in the matter of Dion Wade. May we please have appearances?
Deputy Ethics Counsel Ho Chin Kim for the Office of Attorney Ethics.
Police Court Donald Lemuro appearing on behalf of Dion Wade.
Robert Hilla appearing on behalf of New Jersey State Bar Association.
And Ms. Wade?
To my right is Dion Wade, Your Honor.
Ms. Wade, you'll have an opportunity.
Christina Harvey. To my left is Christina Harvey, a partner in my firm.
Ms. Wade, you'll have an opportunity, if you like, to address the court after everyone else has spoken. You need not, and you'll have a chance to talk to Mr. Lemuro before making that decision.
Thank you.
Ms. Kim, please be seated.
Good afternoon, Chief Justice and Associate Justices of the court. In this attorney disciplinary matter, the Office of Attorney Ethics submits that the court should adopt the unanimous recommendation of the review board that respondent Dion Laurel Wade be disbarred for her knowing misappropriation of client and escrow funds. Ms. Wade was advised by the OAE that her books and records would be subject to a random audit. This was in 2017. The day prior to the actual audit, Ms. Wade deposited $12,000 into her attorney trust account that had been short for a particular client matter. During the random audit, random auditor Karen Hagerman typically will go through an audit questionnaire with all our attorneys. Prior to that questionnaire even being begun, Ms. Wade proffered that she had quote-unquote borrowed money from a client. And this was not it was not prompted by the OAE examiner. It was a statement made by Ms. Wade on her own to the auditor. After the questionnaire and the audit was concluded, Ms. Wade then went online to retrieve account details of her attorney trust account for Auditor Hagerman. In that account detail is the $12,000 deposit into her attorney trust account the day prior. That audit then resulted in a deficiency letter being sent to Ms. Wade, advising her of the various deficiencies in her record keeping, with the caution that the matter would be forwarded to the director for possible disciplinary action. In response to that letter from the OAE, Ms. Wade then submitted, again, on her own, a written explanation in which she admitted that she borrowed monies in two specific client matters and that she knew she had to put the money back. But she always intended to borrow. She did not intend to steal, but she knew she had to put the money back. Ms. Wade then also explained in her written response to the random audit that she considered that she had a line of credit. She viewed the monies in her attorney trust account as a line of credit in her brain. And she kept track of those client monies that she was owed or that she owed to her clients in her head. That was her record keeping. And her line of credit never exceeded $12,000 because she knew she on her own would never be able to pay any monies back to a client above $12,000. She anticipated receiving a $12,000 fee in a pending real estate transaction. Based on those admissions from Ms. Wade, the OAE began an actual disciplinary investigation. Ms. Wade was interviewed two more times in which she made additional admissions, and it was not until the OAE filed its complaint against Ms. Wade, alleging knowing misappropriation in violation of In re Wilson and In re Hollandonner, that Ms. Wade then began to backtrack from her prior missions, such that now she claimed the defense of poor record keeping and of commingling her personal funds in her attorney trust account. The OAE went to hearing. The special master issued a very strong decision finding knowing misappropriation committed by Ms. Wade. The board, in a unanimous decision, also found clear and convincing evidence of knowing misappropriation of both client and escrow funds, along with the other charges alleged in the OAE's complaint. Before this court, we now have Ms. Wade, who states that because of her unique circumstances and personal history, and somehow being misled by the OAE's auditors and investigators, she is being held to disbarment. That has been the law in New Jersey since 1979, and such that she should not be disbarred. The OAE submits there is clear and convincing evidence in the record below that Ms. Wade's own conduct should result in the ultimate sanction of disbarment. To briefly address the New Jersey Bar's amicus position that In re Wilson is not clear, or rather that the court should clarify the holding in Wilson to limit knowing misappropriation cases to those where the attorney is shown to have intended to steal or intended to defraud clients of their monies, that has never been the holding of Wilson. I would note that in footnote one of the Wilson matter, the court very plainly stated, knowing misappropriation includes not only stealing, but also borrowing, and ultimately stating it is any unauthorized taking of client trust funds. That is what we have with Ms. Wade's matter. So the OAE's position is that the state bar's position and respondent's position is asking to erase at least 40 years of this court's jurisprudence regarding Wilson and all its progeny. The OAE has, in the past, charged misappropriation against attorneys, and where the finder of fact or the review board or this court finds that the office has failed to prove its case by clear and convincing evidence, the court has never hesitated to so find. But to ask the court to clarify when no such clarification is needed seems far afield. And so the OAE relies on its briefs to the trier of fact, to the board, to this court in opposition of respondent's brief, and as opposition to the bar's interpretation of Wilson to state there should be no exception to the In re Wilson and In re Hollandonner holdings. Ms. Wade herself admitted to quote unquote borrowing funds during the very beginning of the OAE's investigation. She should be held to those admissions such that she should be disbarred.
Questions, anyone? Thank you, Ms. Kim. Mr. Lemire.
Mr. Chief Justice, would it be appropriate to deviate a little from the order and have my client address the court first?
Sure.
Thank you.
Please go ahead, Ms. Wade.
Okay. Good afternoon, Chief Justice and Associate Justices of this court. Despite the fact that this has been the most challenging 4.5 years of my life, I am grateful to the Office of Attorney Ethics, specifically to Mrs. Karen Hagerman, because but for the audit and Mrs. Hagerman's painstaking assistance, I would have had no idea I was doing anything wrong. Since I was 8 years old, I wanted nothing more than to be an attorney to serve my community. I was so determined nothing could distract or dissuade me from achieving my goal. My brother and I were reared in the projects of Passaic, New Jersey. My father abandoned our family and provided no financial or emotional support. My mother, whom I love dearly, was and still is saddled with substance abuse issues. By the time I was a senior at Passaic High School, my brother was incarcerated and my mother was undergoing her second attempt to successfully complete a drug rehabilitation program. At that point, the notion of being the first in my family to attend and graduate from college seemed almost impossible. Despite our lack of money and being faced with seemingly insurmountable obstacles, I persevered. Though it took me 9 years, I obtained and earned my 4-year university degree. Law school brought on different challenges. While my classmates seemed to be breezing through class, I could barely understand what I was reading. I remember spending hours using Black's Law Dictionary to read one case. I cried often as I had been up all night reading, distressed because I didn't know whether I would be able to finish in time for my 8 o'clock a.m. class. Imagine calling home frustrated after reading case law riddled with ux and flux, only to be met with, "Dion, you're in school, what's the problem?" No one understood. I could laugh about it now. It wasn't funny then. When I graduated law school, my mother and I moved to Patterson, a city which neighbors Passaic. After I passed the bar exam, I opened a law practice in our dining room. I have a picture to remind me of my journey. I stayed in Patterson because I remembered the frustration my family encountered scraping up money on behalf of my brother to pay retainer fees for attorneys who showed up to court unprepared, who took advantage of us, who sent someone else in their stead completely unfamiliar with my brother's case, performed substandard work, or failed to appear altogether. I pledged I would do better for my people. In the 20 years that I've represented clients in Patterson and Passaic, my clients frequently couldn't afford to pay my fee and often couldn't afford to pay me anything. I've represented them anyway, putting myself second. Service to others is my plumb line. As this court may be aware, I attended Fisk University. W.E.B. Du Bois, a leading scholar and Fisk alumnus, propounded the theory of the talented 10th. Therein, the top 10th of the Black race is charged with carrying and caring for the balance of the race. I adopted that theory as my personal credo. In doing so, I volunteered for community services organizations such as Northeast New Jersey Legal Services, handling their Passaic and Bergen County bankruptcy clinics, the English and Spanish divorce clinics. In addition, I handled at least 4 pro bono cases annually. I volunteer in many programs at St. Luke Baptist Church of Patterson, New Jersey, where I've been a member for over 20 years. There, I created the Legal Assistance Ministry, which holds seminars in areas such as adult/teen domestic violence, bankruptcy, wills, estates and trusts, and real estate. We also offer free basic legal assistance. In addition, I volunteer at Eagle Flight Squadron, Inc., a youth services organization committed to teaching inner city youth about aviation. Should a child enter the program and follow program guidelines, he or she can earn a private pilot's license before they turn 16 years old. More than all of that, I am a believer in Christ. And as a believer, I work earnestly to live according to the word of God. I read the Bible daily. Admittedly, I'm human. I make mistakes. I fall short. I miss the mark. But in my practice, as well as in my community, I have compassion for those that I serve. And I would not intentionally do anything that would cause them harm. My pastor, Reverend Kenneth D.R. Clayton, and members of my community refer clients to me because they know I care. I live my life trying to do what's right and putting others' face. And to now be faced with the possibility of losing the very thing I sacrificed and worked so hard to obtain because of ignorance is devastating. There are no lawyers in my family. I had no one to teach me the intricacies of running a law practice. I had no one to teach me how to balance a checkbook. There was no way I was going to be exposed to three-way reconciliation or advised about what to do with a trust account or ledger cards. In hindsight, I should have looked at my bank statements, which remained unopened, instead of letting them pile up. But this court should know that I would never do anything to hurt the people who have come to trust me so much. As I stand here, I know that one of the best days of my legal career was when Ms. Karen Hagerman conducted the audit of my office. I have taken her lessons and the advice of others, and as a result, my trust account has been run excellently for the last 4.5 years, because now I understand what I'm supposed to do. For this, I remain grateful to the Office of Attorney Ethics, and I thank this court for listening to me.
Wait, can I ask you a question?
Sure.
Put aside the intricacies of how one should handle a trust account. And explain to us in your own words how you could have thought it was okay to borrow or take clients' money without their permission. Please.
Your Honor, I never thought it was okay to borrow or take client money without their permission. I honestly just wasn't paying attention to what I was doing. And the only thing I could think of was when I noticed that there was a deficit, because I don't know if this court is aware, I ran almost $100,000 of my own money through the trust account because I didn't know that wasn't what I was supposed to do. So when I looked, when I got the notice stating, you're being audited, I looked at my account and noticed I was so far behind. So I said, oh my God, I've got to come up with this money. But that was the only time I looked at it. If Ms. Hagerman, when she came to my office, I had years of balancing and it was everything was a mess. It was a complete and total mess. So it wasn't a situation where I even thought I was borrowing or taking, but that was the only explanation I could logically come up with. When Mr. Addio, I don't know if this court is aware, but Mr. Addio is the auditor, the private auditor accountant who ran a forensic accounting of my trust account. He found out that I gave away, or my accounts, I gave away $3,500 of my own money. Just not aware, not paying attention, I guess, I probably should have, if I had known better. I'm sorry.
Wait, how could you think in running a practice it was acceptable to have bank statements come in and you not even open the envelopes to look at them?
Not having the knowledge, not having the experience, not having somebody sit down, somebody to go to say, hey, this is what you need to do.
Didn't you have a friend who was an attorney? She testified in
your
hearing.
But Judge, if I'll be honest with you, she asked me how to do three-way reconciliation.
That she was bewildered at the unopened envelopes that were.
It was a mess. I just, honest to God, I think I was focused more on the people because than I was even on my own self. My nickname is the poor lawyer.
Did you take a skills and methods course to get your plenary license?
And when we initially were licensed as attorneys, they made us take a group of courses, but I don't know if this court is aware. After that, we didn't have to take any more CLEs until maybe about 2017.
But in that initial group, wasn't there coverage of
not on how to do three-way reconciliation, how to operate a trust account. There was nothing
the
that went.
Of a trust account?
I'm sorry.
The purpose of a trust account?
I don't recall anything being as specific as me sitting down with me, I mean, Mrs. Hagerman literally sat down with me for hours. I think she might have stayed at my office for approximately 8.5, maybe 9 hours to show me what to do.
You were admitted in 2002, and this audit takes place in 2017. So
correct.
15 years. At any point during that time period, had you even heard of the Wilson case?
No. And Judge, my family, I'm aware of wrong and right. I have a moral compass. I would never intentionally do something that's going to cause. I just remember all of those nights, staying up all night, crying in law school, crying and just not being able to grasp the information and thinking about quitting and wanting to quit it and wanting to give up. I would never do anything intentionally that would sacrifice or cause me to lose all of that sacrifice. I don't have a husband, no children, nothing. I gave up everything to be an attorney. So why would I intentionally do something simple like that to lose my license? This is all I've ever worked for.
In your mind, is it wrong to take or to borrow clients' money without their permission?
In my mind, Judge, absolutely, it's wrong. But I'm gonna qualify that by saying, had I had the training and known what to do with the account, we would not be here.
You heard Ms. Kim, one follow-up. You heard Ms. Kim in her recitation say that you admitted to those things.
Well, I was, in my head, I was saying, well, I know I'm not going to do anything. In my head, it was either stealing or borrowing, right? Because I hadn't even heard of Wilson until after I got the letter from the Office of Attorney Ethics. Honestly, I was just trying to be honest. So put me on the cross. I'll do whatever you say. I figured if I be honest about whatever it is I did wrong, God will work it out, and I will be able to, you know, if I get suspended or if I have to spend a little time on the bench, I'll do that. But I never even heard of Wilson until after I got the response back from the Office of Attorney. I didn't realize I was in so much trouble. Honest to God, I didn't know. I did not know. If I had had a slight clue, any idea that I was crossing a line, I never would have crossed the line. I'm sorry, Judge.
You're fine. So I have a question. So you heard Ms. Kim's recitation of the facts, and she indicated that the day before the audit was going to be conducted, you transferred $12,000 into your trust account. So you've stated in your presentation before us today that you had no understanding, no concept of what the purpose of the trust account and how to manage it. So explain why a day before the audit, seemingly at a time where you didn't know Wilson, didn't understand the rules surrounding trust accounts or even the purpose of the trust account, why then was there this big transfer a day before?
Because I finally looked at the account. When somebody says they're going to audit you, you think, okay, well, let me look at it and make sure that everything's in order for when they come. That was it. It wasn't me trying to be duplicitous or trying to hide anything or trying to run away from anything. In fact, when Ms. Hagerman came, I gave her everything because I was trying to just be forthcoming and be honest about everything.
So just so I have an understanding, so you said you wanted to make sure everything was in order, and at some point today, you said you realized you were really far behind. So I want to have an understanding of what you mean by that, because again, part of your argument is that you had no concept of what was supposed to be done with your accounts and how you were supposed to manage your accounts. So how then were you aware that you were behind or that money needed to go in? It seems as though you were aware that there was money that should have been there.
Honestly, it didn't happen until that day. I mean, not the day, but I think they gave me a letter and then I finally sat down and looked and then I said, oh, I think you're short here. You have to fix it.
Short in terms of money that was supposed to be in the account that belonged to your clients?
Yes, Judge. Admittedly, yes. I mean, because I can't say it wasn't mine, but I didn't pay attention until I got that notice. Unfortunately for me.
Ms. Wade, you don't deny the statements that you initially made to the
Again, Your Honor, in terms of my understanding, there was either borrowing or stealing, and I knew I wasn't stealing. So in terms of my understanding, it was either borrowing or stealing. I had no other way of explaining what had taken place until Mr. Adio said to me, look, you don't know how to, when Ms. Hagerman came to me and said, Dion, look, this is how you keep abreast of what's going on with the trust account. These are the ledger cards which relate to each client. This is how you put it into your ledger. This is how you do three-way reconciliation. This is how you keep track of what's going on with your trust account.
But when you spoke with, I'm trying to understand, what did you mean when you told the representatives of the OAE that you were borrowing the money?
Again, Judge, if in the world of explaining things in my head, and again, we have to think about it the way I didn't think sloppy accounting, or I just was thinking, I know I'm not stealing. I know I'm not doing anything to hurt anybody. So I know I'm not stealing. So if I know I'm not stealing, I must have been borrowing because I knew I wasn't stealing. I didn't even think poor accounting or anything like that. I just thought I knew I wasn't stealing. That's the only explanation.
Did you think it was not stealing because you intended to replace the money?
I just knew the money was gone. Like I personally put like almost $100,000 of my own money in that account. Like I ran it through the account. So I really wasn't paying attention to whose money was, you know, what money was. There was no gauge or line. Am I making sense at all?
I may. As I understand your testimony, you didn't know that it was improper. You didn't know it was a shortfall or anything until you got the letter about the audit. Is that correct?
Yes.
Did you tell the attorney ethics that you repeatedly recognized shortfalls in your trust account and transfer required funds to the account? Did you tell them that?
I don't.
You repeatedly recognized them?
No, I don't recall that, Judge. I'm sorry. I don't recall saying that. No, Your Honor, I don't.
Were you aware that the attorney trust account had a $12,000 float for you, for lack of a better term?
Well, again, I'll state it. I know I don't want to sound redundant because... I don't want it to seem like I'm being flippant. The only thing I could think of, Judge, is the truth, which is I don't know. I know if I had known better, if I had met with Ms. Hagerman when I started my practice, if I had been taught how to handle an attorney trust account, if I had been taught how to manage ledger cards and do three-way reconciliation, I would never have mixed my own money in that account. I would never have done, it would never have happened. It would never have happened. I'm not the kind of person that willy-nilly gets into trouble. I just don't do that, which is why I felt it was necessary for me to fight, because I can't just give up the very thing that I worked so hard to obtain. And it seemed almost impossible that it would happen for me. So I would not, if I had just known in the beginning, Dion, this is how you run a trust account. Dion, this is what you need to do. This never would have happened. I would not be before you. I probably would never even meet you all. It just wouldn't happen. If I had known in the beginning, it never would have happened. It never would have happened.
Have you always practiced by yourself?
I have always practiced by myself. I've always practiced by myself. And, you know, I don't know. I guess I was focused on the people, helping people, the pro bono work, just trying to get all of that stuff done, you know, taking care of people, being ready for court.
Are there other lawyers in your building?
No, it's just me. There's me, Dion, the lawyer. There's my neighbor, who's the owner of the building. They own a real estate office. There's my neighbor downstairs, Mustafa, who's the insurance guy. And then there's H&R Block. So that's...
But you worked with legal services, so you had interaction.
I do. I work with legal services. I'm committed to legal services. I love helping people. You know, I love running the bankruptcy clinic. I love running the Spanish and English because people seem so desperate when they come in. And to take something like bankruptcy that can be kind of stressful, right, for a person who's thinking about filing for bankruptcy, to take something like bankruptcy and demystify it, make it easy, and to tell them, listen, it's okay that you made a mistake financially. This is here to help you out and to help you get a fresh start. So that's what I do in the bankruptcy clinic, in the security deposit clinic. I help people, you know, get their money back from their landlords. In the divorce clinic, that's even stressful. I help people with that. So at my church, it's just, you know, I've lived my life just trying to be helpful. I mean, and again, like I said, they call me the poor lawyer. Like, I really, if you can see my car every week, it's like some other problem with my car. Just the alternator had to be changed. So I have a 2000. I'm not out here trying to get rich. I live in Patterson. You know, it's not the best of neighborhoods, but I have my small place. You know, it's mine and my little puppy. So that's what I have. I'm not...
Have you ever had access to any, like, legal publications such as the Law Journal?
So when I first started practicing, I think they gave me the Law Journal publication for free. But then I couldn't afford, I know this sounds crazy, I couldn't afford to buy it. So I just, I can't do what I can't afford. I'm sorry, I have to live within my means. And so I couldn't afford to purchase the publication. So I don't get the publication.
You interacted anymore with lawyers in a number of different ways, as you've described for us, right?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
You've interacted with lawyers.
Come into court. Hi, Ms. Wade, how you doing? If that's my adversary, we go against each other. I'll see you later, and I go back to my office. Mostly me, it's me. I spend a lot of time alone. It's church. It's the office. It's home. That's it. I don't even... That's it. It's church, it's the home, it's the office.
Did you ever ask any of the lawyers with whom you interacted for some advice?
No. And now, absolutely, yes, absolutely, yes. But then, no.
And, I mean, help us understand this. You're helping people down on their luck with bankruptcy problems, with financial problems, and you understand the importance of setting a clear path and giving them good guidance. Why didn't you apply those same rules to yourself?
Hindsight is 20/20 vision. And I think I was just so busy trying to help everybody else that I kind of left Dion in the wind. I really did. I just kind of left myself in the wind. And, you know, I thought that maybe giving myself, you know, to people, to help people was the thing that God wanted to do. I really wanted me to do, rather. I wasn't really thinking about me or doing anything for me. So I don't know. Could I have done things better? I'm sure I could have. Maybe I should have gotten a job, you know, until at least I understood what I was doing. But I really just wanted to be there to help people. It won't be that way. It isn't that way. It hasn't been that way moving forward. Like now, having Ms. Karen Hagerman's instruction and having the knowledge that she gave me, that she imparted to me painstakingly again, you know, I realized that, you know, I have to take time to get my affairs in order, you know, and just work towards that.
Is there anything else you'd like to tell us?
No, Judge, I think, Your Honor, I think I'm going to stop here. I appreciate, again, this court taking the time to give me an opportunity to be heard and to hear my petition. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Wade. Mr. Lemuro.
Chief Justice, fellow justices of this court. I start with a couple of arguments that I try to take in some order, the first of which is that I submit to the court that there was not a knowing misappropriation proven by clear and convincing evidence in this case. As I stand before this court, I feel an awesome responsibility to Dion Wade. From the day she came in and other lawyers turned her down, I said, I will not leave you behind. Because she represents the best in the practice of law. The best. When she started the race of life, it was with no father. It was with a mother of substance abuse more than not. It was with a brother who was incarcerated while she was in school. If it takes a village to raise a child, she was without a village. She came from a different background than most of the lawyers that practice law. I can remember being a solo practitioner. I can actually remember driving a 1961 Chevy station wagon that I bought for $25 and getting an office desk from Rutgers for $25 and starting. But I started with principles that had been beaten into me by four immigrant grandparents. I knew how to balance a checkbook by the time I was in eighth grade. Dion didn't know how to balance a checkbook until she was 30. My parents cared for me and assisted me. What Dion left out of her story in law school was not only was she crying as she was trying to understand those words that were never spoken in her community, but she was working in law school so she could pay her mother's rent. That's her background. So when she started her law office, her race wasn't like the other lawyers that practice law. She didn't instinctively know what a trust account was. She didn't instinctively understand. She didn't even have balance accounts. So she had 10 years worth of statements sitting in a corner. And although you ask, how is that possible? We never lived the denial that she was been through. Just looking at that pile. Over 4 years, she put $97,000 of her own money. $100,000 sounds like a lot of money until you break it down. It's $20,000 a year she put into that trust account of her own money, not with a clue whether she was commingling funds, that she was possibly over taking someone else's money, She just thought she'd run the account. And the one great thing that she did, among other great things, is she never left a client without funds. This case has no victims. But for the random audit, she would have continued, in my humble opinion, to practice law for another 20 years with the bank statements running up, her getting in and out of the trust, but never, ever hurting a client. She would have made sure, as she did, that nobody got hurt. And if she had an event, like a closing, she would look online at the bank account and say, you're $5,000 short, and it'd go in. She never understood that someone's money was at risk here, ever. The reason I asked for her to speak first, in unusually, because I've appeared before this court with other lawyers and they've always addressed last, is because I so fundamentally believe her statement that she never knew she was taking someone's money. She never hurt anybody. Dion drives a car that she makes, misses her appointments with my office more than she makes, because sometimes the car starts and sometimes it doesn't. When she lives in, tells you she lives in a little place in Patterson, it's an apartment. The first 8 years she practiced law, it was from the kitchen table in a project. She says the dining room of her mother, but that's kind of a glory way of saying she's in the projects, helping the people in the building, in the street, at the church, every day. And most of her clients couldn't pay her. And when they could pay, it was never a working lawyer's fee. In addition to there being not one client who suffered a loss, she practices law for 20 years. We're in 2021. She's never had an ethics complaint. She's never had a client complain to OAE about her. She's had one fee dispute that was resolved in her favor. Those facts speak louder than my words. And Dion doesn't stand before this court without this court having looked at other cases and said there has not been a knowing misappropriation. In In re Konopka, 126 NJ 225, the court stated that the respondent did not use the trust account for his own venal purposes. He did use other people's money because it was, his accounts were a mess. Better than Dion, who not only didn't maintain a balance, she didn't have ledger cards. She didn't have a client sheet. Comparing Konopka to Wade, this court, I would suggest, is compelled to find there wasn't a knowing misappropriation.
Are you making an argument for negligent misappropriation and therefore application of mitigating factors?
That's correct.
Is that what you're doing here?
I'm moving into the case law. That's exactly where I'm going, Justice. Yes.
As you do so, can you address recklessness and willful blindness?
I'm sorry.
As you do so, can you address recklessness and willful blindness?
particularly in the context of what we've heard about years' worth of statements left to one side.
You know, I don't mean to speak in non-lawyer language to this honorable court, but my kids growing up would say, you know, you don't know what you don't know. You can be willfully indifferent if you know it's wrong and you then look away. That's willful indifference. That's blindly doing it. I believe in this particular case, the kids have it right. She didn't know what she didn't know. It seems incredible to this court that you have, who practice law, perhaps starting in a prosecutor's office, starting
in... Isn't that what CLE's for, counsel?
Excuse me?
Isn't that what CLE's for, to learn what you don't know? Isn't that a requirement of every attorney?
What Dion is saying...
No, I'm asking you that question. I don't know what Dion's saying. I want you to answer my question. Isn't that what CLE's for?
The answer
is
would
it
be
a requirement.
The answer would be if the ELE, if the ILE, if
CLE,
if Alert Skills and Methods Court.
No, CLE, Continuing Legal Education.
Either one of those.
You're required to have it every year.
Yes,
I believe.
One of the suggestions I have at the end of this.
No, but you still haven't answered my question.
Well, yes, I think that one of the purposes should be that no attorney doesn't appreciate what. This client didn't appreciate what Kanapka didn't.
Still haven't answered my question, counsel. CLE is for attorneys to familiarize ourselves with the rules and with the requirements, and it's mandatory. Would you agree with that?
CLE.
Continuing Legal Education.
Continuing Legal Education does not mandate anything on trust accounts, so it does not address the issue. It could, but it doesn't. In fact, one of the proposals, one of the positions I would advocate today is that every lawyer
CLE
who is a signatory on a trust account, not, CLE is not enough, Your Honor. ICL's not enough. What should be is like we this court just put, where we mandated 1 hour of diversity training. I would suggest there must be, for every signatory to a trust account, a 12-hour mandatory period of time where they take a course on trust account management. So no lawyer who manages a trust account, either as a solo or in a 1,000-lawyer firm, no lawyer will not understand the principles of trust account management. But so to answer your Honor's question, your Justice's question, no, ICL presently does not solve that problem. It can, but it doesn't. I have never taken a course. In 47 years, I've never taken a course on trust account management. And I've been certified civilly and criminally since 1985. So I've had mandatory continuing education every year since 1985, and there's never been a course on this.
Mr. Lemuro.
That I've taken.
I just want to make certain I understand your argument. Your position is that your client never knew she was out of trust because she wasn't opening up the bank statements, and therefore was what, computing this somehow in her head? Is that your position?
My position, very close to that, yes. My position is that, as with these other cases that I cite in my brief, those attorneys didn't run a balance. They didn't know the balance. Even more for her, she had not a clue what the balance in a trust account was at any time in her 15 years until Ms. Hagerman came in. But for the last 4.5 years, she knows it to the penny. And she knows what every single client that she's represented over the last 4.5 years having it in the trust account is done to the penny.
I understand, but at the time, your position is she did not know that she was out of trust.
No. There was no way for her to know, with all due respect. There's no way she could know.
Counsel, can I ask a question? And this may be my fault, because I don't remember from the record seeing whether there was ever a time when her attorney trust account was deficient.
There was never a time except for one instance which was not out of trust. What happened was in 2008, in 2008 she wrote a check for, I think it was $60,000, and I'm going to say to a person named Teal, but I could be off on that. That check was not tendered for 2 years. 2 years, so when it was written, it was in.
Was the account overdrawn?
No.
Well, she remedied that by...
Yes.
Loan, having, right? Wasn't there a $10,000 agreement between lawyer and client to pay back that money? I mean,
yes, 2 years later, though, because it wasn't presented for 2 years. So she had no clue when it was finally presented that it was out of balance. She didn't know. There was no way for her to know.
Unusual way to account for monies due to a client, wouldn't you agree?
Of course.
A contract between a lawyer and a client without even advising her to consult with someone else?
You're absolutely correct. I can't argue with that, nor would I.
Mr. Lamora, one of the basic problems I have with where you're going with this argument is when I think about Wilson, and lawyers should know what Wilson stands for. They're obligated. It came down before she became a member of the bar. A large motivating factor for the court, and Chief Justice Wilentz, who wrote that opinion, was that it would be a deterrent for other attorneys to know that no matter the reason, the excuse for taking the money, it was going to be met with very severe consequences. Are you asking us to undermine or soften or lose that deterrent effect by accepting where you're, I think, going with this case?
I'm asking this court to endorse the position of Justice Stein in the concurring opinion in In re James, where he says exactly that. And it's joined by Justice O'Hearn, and it is joined by Justice Garibaldi in a 4-3 opinion. And that opinion, I believe, is so much more appropriate for this situation. So yes, I'm asking this court, I will be asking that. I first want the court, I'm asking the court first to find a misappropriation. If it did find it, then I'm asking it to relax.
You're asking the court to find it was negligent.
Correct.
And not intentional.
Correct.
That's your first position.
Correct. I would go to the Wilson question.
Then you go to the Wilson question.
Correct. And I was I would have gotten there under your questions fine, though. That's where the train was going there, Madam Justice.
Look for a minute at the broader question of protecting members of the public and the fees and the monies that they entrust with attorneys. What message would they be reasonably entitled to take from a case in which someone doesn't open bank statements for 15 years?
I would say the answer is the public expects attorneys to keep their trust account and balance it. I can't argue that position, Mr. Chief Justice. I can maintain, however, that the public does expect also that attorneys like Ms. Wade, who truly never mean to make that mistake with that account, can find an opportunity for justice in this court. To take myself back to In re Wilson, the very first case, in that case, the court wrote, I think it's on page 461, I'm almost certain of it, that it's the rare case where mitigating factors will be considered. I think it's at 453 the court held that it will be virtually impossible. Well, this court didn't choose the word almost. It didn't choose the word rarely lightly. And yet, as the OAE points out in her brief to this court, not one case under In re Wilson has found to be rare, to be almost. And yet this court chose those words purposefully.
And the closest cases that came to finding that are the ones where the court wrestled with severe mental illness, however temporary in effect, over whether or not there was sufficient mental capacity to form knowing misappropriation. So I don't think that fits here.
The mental illness does not, but the societal interest does. The reality of Dionne Wade clearly does, Madam Justice. And I point this out I so fervently believe in his case that I'm harking back to 1969 when Malcolm X wrote in his autobiography that if you're from Harlem, you'll never get out. I don't care what your degree is. I don't care where you go. You're coming back. There's going to be a message to the people of Patterson that I think is equally important to every message on this court's agenda, which is if you do everything right in your life for a community, you sacrifice yourself, you do everything to help people, you lecture at ICL, you lecture to your fellow lawyers, the bench relies on you every day for 15 years to do right by the clients, and the clients rely on you, then you still end up in the streets of Patterson. And that message is as strong to me.
Counselor, I don't think you know our personal circumstances. Perhaps
I don't. Another
argument.
All of us come from personal.
You don't know our personal circumstances. Any of us. Okay?
I think I do a little bit. I'm not saying that anybody gets a free ride in life. I'm just saying that we all carry a lot on our shoulders, all of us. And I believe we try our best to help those people from our circumstances, all of us.
Mr. Lemuro, I believe that Ms. Kim had quoted something to the effect, I'm looking at page 10 of the DRB.
If I could,
can you hear me?
71 of my hearing isn't what it used to be.
I'll keep my voice up. So on page 10 of the DRB, it says that respondent then asserted that her, quote, limit, end quote, in borrowing client funds was $12,000, the amount of the fee she was expecting in the unrelated, then, HONUS client matter. Explain that to us, if you can.
I can only explain it in the words that Dion explains it, that she could almost think that if she looked at, if there was a closing on her car, and if the account, which it didn't, but if had the account been overdrawn, she would have had the ability, or if she was $12,000 short for a given closing, she had someone to help her. But she didn't think that every day of when she was in the office. In other words, it would only be if an event occurred. She could take some solace in the effect that if she, since she didn't balance the account ever, if it was out of balance, there was a remedy. So that nobody would get hurt. I believe that's what she's saying. It's not what anybody would want to hear her say. I would love to have a different argument to make, but I believe that she believed that she was doing right by everybody. She was not taking anybody's money, and God forbid, in doing her $100,000 that she put into that account over 4 years, when she was taking money and putting it in, if it didn't balance, even though the balance wasn't zero, but if it wasn't, so a client needed the money, she knew that she had somebody who could help her. That's what I think she's saying.
If she never opened the bank statements, how did she even know that she was, what her balance was? I mean, I presume, obviously she'd be notified if she were overdrawn, but.
What she testified to is if she had an event, she could call, look it up online and find the number.
She could
look up the account online.
Right.
She could find out what the balance was at that moment. So if she had a closing for Billy.
All these unopened bank statements, obviously everything is online. Banking is largely online, although they will send you statements if you want them. So how often was she accessing her accounts online?
As I understand the testimony, only when an event would occur.
Event being a closing?
She took a personal injury. Say she had money for a closing, and she had to look to see if she had the money, that's when she would do it, which wasn't that frequent for her. This is not someone closing 20 titles a year. If she closes 3 titles a year, it would be a lot. But that would be the time.
What kind of personal practice was she running besides the clinics and legal services work that she was doing? What kind of legal work was it?
Really, that's it. She was doing landlord-tenant. She was doing wills at the church. She was doing street law. That's it. She wasn't doing personal injury for $100,000. She wasn't handling medical malpractice. She wasn't handling complex matrimonial. She would do an uncontested divorce. She would do those type of things.
You're conceding some violation of the rules of professional conduct as you stand
before. I'm conceding she was negligent.
So what type of discipline, given your argument, do you think this court should impose?
I think this court, and I understand I've struggled with this, I believe the answer I would ask this court to impose is, in essence, a suspended sentence of 4.5 years, because for 4.5 years, she did everything right. To take her license now, even for a day.
I'm sorry, what does that mean? A suspended sentence of 4.5 years?
In other words, I'm using criminal law.
Are you talking about a retroactive suspension?
Yes.
But she wasn't suspended.
I understand, but she's done a retroactive mentorship, a retroactive period in which she, because for 4.5 years now, she's had the mentor, she's had the tutoring, she's had done everything right. I know this is, again, a second time I'm doing this, and I apologize to this court. But to suspend her now would only hurt people and would help nobody and would not help Dion. It will not, and punishing her is not going to send a ripple effect through the practice of law. I suggest to this court that the 4.5 year mentorship she's had, apprenticeship, if you will, and if you want to have somebody for 2 years going forward, continuing to make sure that she brings somebody along to mentor her, to check periodically that everything.
Because you're arguing for zero suspension.
That's what I believe is
appropriate. You're on an order to show cause.
I recognize I'm asking a tremendous amount of this court, and I don't do it lightly, but I believe it's appropriate. And I guess what I believe is silly. I suggest that the facts make this the right decision.
Anything else you'd like to add, Mr. Lemire?
If you don't mind, I got way off my list. I might have a couple of more quick asides, if I can.
We're at about the half hour, so if you could do that.
I can do it quickly, yes. I'm not going to get to it, but I'm going to suggest that at page 587, and I believe it's Gallo, this court said, finally and simply, respondent did not know how to manage his attorney count, because no one had ever shown him. The record clearly discloses an utter lack of comprehension of what constitutes the proper operation of the accounts. The court, and it's James. The court then goes further to say, this record demonstrates that respondent had been extremely active in his community, politically and professionally, enjoys a good reputation among his peers. His trustworthy and professionalism has never been challenged. That was in a case where trust account money had been used for payroll obligations. Not our case. And this court found it wasn't knowing because he didn't have the balance to look at. When you look at Gallo, when you look at Konopka, when you look at Noonan, I could go on. These cases, I'm citing to the court, has been this court taking into consideration that the attorney did not have a balance to look at. And, you know, Konopka, on 26 occasions, he paid his parents' mortgage from the trust account, and it wasn't deemed to be knowing because he didn't have a balance. So he used other people's money in the trust account, never bouncing it. But on 26 occasions, and it was for his parents. How can you look at Tanaka? How can you look at James? How can you look at Orlando and say this client, this attorney, knowingly misappropriated? In closing, I leave this quote. On Friday, we had five of us preparing for this argument. And in my opinion, the person who was the wisest was a first-year, not yet admitted law graduate. And he said to me, Mr. Lemuro, I don't know anything about the trust account. No one taught us anything in law school. Why is it mandated that trust account management is a course that everybody should take? I said to myself, all these other lawyers that are doing this for 30, 50, 40 years, none of us really appreciate how difficult and how wise that decision was by him. And had I gone further into my position on Wilson, I would have made that a linchpin in what I believe. When you talk about what the public can take confidence in, the public would take tremendous, would the random audit that this court does a tremendous thing in building up confidence. But it does catch in that net somebody who would never, ever have taken any client's money, but wasn't in balance, wasn't doing the right thing by the trust account sheet. The public would truly be improved or its confidence raised if there was mandated ICL on trust account maintenance for anyone who signs a trust account check. That truly would bring us. I'm going to ask this court, so I don't read it in and I stop, to read Justice Stein's concurring opinion in Kanaka. I believe it truly does synthesize where I would get if I had gone further in this position. Hey, does anybody have a question?
Thank you very much, counsel.
Thank you.
Mr. Hilla. And as you're coming up to the podium, I noticed that Mr. Carmagnola signed the brief and listed himself on it. And we understand fully why he's not here today and ask that you extend our condolences. It seems, has found a good pinch hitter.
I will, Chief Justice. Thank you. We've submitted our briefing. I think it lays out our position, pretty succinctly and completely. There's just a couple of remarks or comments I'd like to give this court on behalf of the State Bar Association. First, while couched in terms of knowing misappropriation, when viewing Wilson and the cases following Wilson, the court has consistently reserved the application of that harsh, automatic disbarment rule for those situations where a lawyer purposely steals or defrauds a client, steals from or defrauds a client. In those extreme circumstances, both this court and the Bar Association have viewed that destruction to the public confidence as such that it warrants a departure from the ordinary approach of the disciplinary system in considering all factors, including mitigating factors, and warranting automatic disbarment in that situation. It's in those extreme circumstances that the bar, State Bar Association, and that basic dishonesty situation that the bar submits is part of what is at the heart of Wilson.
That's what I'm trying to understand. I'm trying to understand State Bar's position. You use the term purposely steal. Are you suggesting that Wilson should not apply when there is a knowing misappropriation when the attorney has the intent to return the money to the trust account sometime in the indefinite future?
No, and we're not. But the intent with respect to what the lawyer's thinking of doing with the money has nothing to do with the intent that the lawyer had in committing the act of misappropriation. For instance, in Wilson, when we talk about Wilson, all such cases Wilson limits its treatment of, page 453.
Are you arguing for a stricter standard? Because you're saying the only thing this court should look at is what the attorney intended when he took the money. Other than some unknowing taking of money, they take it because they know what they're doing. So when you argue that, I suggest you're asking for a stricter standard because we can't consider anything else at that point.
Well, we're not really asking for a stricter standard because
that's what seems like you're saying, though.
What I would suggest is when you look at the cases that are applying Wilson, where it's been applied to invoke the automatic disbarment rule, those cases use terminology such as, well, Wilson, of course, talks about what is the merits in these cases at 456. The attorney has stolen his client's money. Borrowing is no less a crime. And even though it says crime and knowing misappropriation are not always identical, the same undercurrents apply there. That is running throughout that opinion. Then we get to Greenberg. And Greenberg says there's no difference between willfully defrauding a client and for the same purpose that lawyer defrauds partners. So at the underpinning of all of that application, is this willful or purposeful desire or intent to commit a wrongful act against someone? In the case of...
They included borrowing, would you agree?
Excuse me?
They included borrowing.
It's getting worse as I get older, but...
They included borrowing, not only borrowing the money. Borrowing, to me, suggests an intent to replace it at some point, but they still included it. So it's not just taking it without any thought of returning it.
Well, I would submit the courts...
If we follow that, I think you guys can just apply a stricter standard than what we have now.
I would submit that the court's looking at no difference between, and again, this gets back to my point, it doesn't matter whether the attorney's going to return the money or keep it. What matters is that the attorney in the first instance intended to take the money. And that's what Wilson stands for and its progeny in those cases. And the reason the
position reach moving money held in trust for one client to cover the needs of another client to make it look as if it's all copacetic.
Yes, because in the lapping cases, the court has also addressed that from the standpoint of a design. That there's a purposeful design in terms of either willful ignorance.
Sometimes it's described as borrowing from another client's account to cover the one that becomes more immediately due with the intention to return it. So I just want to understand the statement.
Right, but in those circumstances, there's an intent to take that money in the first place, in those cases where that's been addressed by the court.
I'm asking the bar's position. Is it the bar's position that misappropriation, knowing misappropriation, occurs when an attorney moves money from one client's account to cover the needs of another client's account?
Well, when the intent to do that is to take the client's money, yes. I think Konopka talks about...
What does that mean, take the client's money? For the attorney's purposes?
Well, Konopka talks, for instance, at... I'm not really sure which page it is, but in the opinion, it talks around 234. It talks about how, if we were to apply the knowing misappropriation rule mechanically to just being out of trust... And obviously, writing a check is a knowing act. But in that case, what Konopka said was, then you wouldn't need the DEC, you wouldn't need the OAE, and you wouldn't need the DRB, and the court could just mechanically look at the statement and say you're out of trust, and you're per se now disbarred.
We've recognized negligent, that a person could be out of trust because they've made a mistake. Okay? Inadvertence, negligence.
Right.
But what we have said is that you cannot knowingly misappropriate money. That is, take money from a trust account knowingly and use it for a purpose for which it was not intended. Do you agree that that is what Wilson stands for?
But isn't that, in essence, intent? Because Because in the situation that we have in negligent misappropriation, this court has said, well, okay, there was a knowing act of misappropriation, but it was negligent. And therefore, is negligent, it doesn't come under Wilson.
Because, look, knowing is a state of mind. So you have money in a trust account. You obviously, when you're moving it out, that's a knowing act. But what it's intended in terms of a knowing misappropriation, you're knowingly taking the money out of the trust account that was intended for A, okay, and you're giving it to B when you know that it should remain with A. Right. That's a knowing, would you agree? That's a knowing misappropriation.
I would agree in that situation that it's a knowing misappropriation. We're not saying to abandon the concept of knowing misappropriation. What we're suggesting is maybe turn to, I can never get that case right, but Konopka. And look at, for instance, at page, I believe it is 234. And in there, there's three elements it talks about. The first is it talks about the lawyer intended to, and intent is the word that's used by the court, intended to misappropriate a client's funds, including consideration. And it talks about at page 231, it also takes into account or examines a venal purpose of the lawyer. The second element that's talked about on that page 234 is that the lawyer knew he or she was wrongfully misappropriating that client's funds at the time the misappropriation occurred. We're urging that knowing should be defined as actual knowledge under a subjective test, which is not far from what terminology RPC 1.0 is suggesting in that definition.
Aren't you really seeking a broader definition of negligent misappropriation? If you think of in a Venn diagram, some misappropriations are intentional, some are negligent. It seems that what you're saying is that there are categories of misappropriations that factually have, under our case law, been viewed as intentional, and you want them in the negligence category. Because, for example, someone is unaware that their conduct constitutes misappropriation. Essentially, I didn't understand what that meant.
That may be the consequence if we don't get a clarification of what knowing misappropriation means. And these three factors, the third being that the lawyer did in fact misappropriate, because you can't have misappropriation with the known appropriate.
Right, but most cases start with a misappropriation, and the question is whether it's intentional or negligent. It seems that what you're seeking is to have more categories of conduct and a subjective state of mind in which the attorney did not understand that what they were doing is wrongful, moved into the negligence category, where perhaps it might otherwise can be considered intentional,
with
a subjective view of what the attorney did or didn't know.
I think that accepting our request, we're suggesting that the court may want to consider these factors that were laid out on those pages in Konopka, but in effect, what we're asking for by this clarification is not to abandon the Wilson standard, not to create an exception, but to define the rule more consistent, or to define a standard more consistently with how the courts approach these cases. And yes, Justice, the impact may be that effectively it may broaden what we may bring under the umbrella of negligent misappropriation, since that's the line of cases that's dealing with this concept. But I think that with respect to those clarifications and those elements, as I just suggested on behalf of the Bar Association for consideration, again, that's for this court to consider, but that's the limited aspect of what our application here is for, that, and it's based on another aspect of that.
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
Where does willful blindness fit in with the framework you're outlining?
Well, willful blindness is no different than ignorance by design. And that would fall within an intentional or knowing misappropriation. So that wouldn't change that line of cases.
But then I think you just said, if I took down what you said correctly, that if someone didn't realize that their conduct was wrongful because they were unaware of it, that would be non-intentional. So what's the difference between that
Here's the problem with the knowing misappropriation standard, and this is probably at the heart of the bar's concern, is that because Wilson's application is triggered by a finding of knowing misappropriation, that disciplinary authorities have been viewing that as something less than the way the court has treated it, which is what I had just discussed earlier. And the problem with that is, from the bar's perspective, is that absence a little more clarification, perhaps, on what falls within that direction, because Wilson and the cases where disbarment has been imposed really find in each of those cases that the lawyer was stealing, the lawyer who's committed thievery, the lawyer was stealing from a client. So the problem from the bar's perspective...
I'm having real difficulty with your saying that, that Wilson is unclear. We have so many cases where we've said you cannot borrow money. We've said that. You cannot borrow one client's money to give to another client knowingly. You think that's unclear?
Well, I think the fact that the absence of intent creates a question with respect to what knowing this appropriation
is. Knowing is a mens rea. Okay, it's similar to intent.
Right.
Okay. Knowingly taking one client's money to pay another client. Is that misappropriation? No, is that a Wilson violation?
Well, it depends on how you define knowing. Here's the problem. Knowing could be almost any conscious act relating to a trust account. If there's an adverse impact to that, then ultimately anything, and this gets back to that discussion in Canopka, could wind up resulting just...
Maybe I'm not being clear, and let me try this one more time. You know, the client, right. The attorney knows that the monies are in the trust account of A.
Right.
They're only to be used for the purposes of a closing. And the attorney knowingly takes that money and gives it to client B for B's closing. Is that a Wilson violation?
And isn't that situation that you've just described an intent to take the client's money for that lawyer's own purpose? Because if it is, then yes, it would be a Wilson violation.
But what other intent could there be? If you,
well, this
you
court
know we take money from one client to give to put in another client's stuff, what else could it be but knowing and intent? What under what fact scenario, mens rea, would you say that that's not knowing?
Well, the fact is we have a whole line of cases dealing with negligent misappropriation. And those are knowing cases, so but they're not.
You think that would fall under, just that was an example, would fall under negligent misappropriation? I took money from client A knowingly to put in client B so client B can go to closing, and you think that's negligent?
Well, in both cases.
No, please, do you think the example I just gave you, you think that's negligent?
Not if you're taking money that you know doesn't belong to you from a client and you're using it for your own purposes, but that's...
No, not for my own purpose, to give to another client.
Well, isn't that for your own purpose? But we're giving it to
whatever.
The client, but the lawyer's making
Is that a knowing misappropriation?
If the lawyer knew that they were
taking... It calls for a yes or no, Mr. Hill. Yes or no, is it or isn't it?
Yes, in that circumstance that you described. But I would submit, and the bar would submit, not always.
Mr. Hill, does the bar have a concern about case law coming out of this court? And I'm not asking you to weigh in on the particular facts of this case. You're here as a friend of the court.
Right.
But if the court were to go down the road of saying, if you don't know the rules, if you don't take time to learn the rules, if you don't balance your books, if you don't look at your statements, and you take money from clients that they've not given you permission to take, that's not a knowing misappropriation. Does the bar have a concern about that being a standard that would apply to lawyers in the state?
I don't think that the bar, and perhaps I haven't articulated it well, I don't think the bar is urging that there should be, that the Wilson rule doesn't apply when a lawyer, whether it's knowingly or intentionally, but takes something from a client knowing they're taking something from a client for their own use. I don't know, and this gets back maybe in this case.
I just want to focus on that for a second.
Yeah.
Because individuals may come forward and say, I didn't know, I didn't look, as we've heard today. Is that of concern to the bar if that becomes the standard? And if that's what the public comes to see from lawyers in the state?
Well, the first thing is, Chief Justice, that's already occurring, and the court's treating those situations either by design or negligent. Secondly, the bar is not urging that there be no discipline for people in either category. It's just a question of whether Wilson, with its recognized harsh result from this court, should be applied beyond the very special circumstances where Wilson Court equated it, in essence, with criminal behavior and thought the lawyer should also be criminally prosecuted, which is a far cry from someone who is committing, as Kanopka talked about, difficulty navigating their trust account and they become out of trust.
But let me zone in on this once more. And again, I'm not talking about Ms. Wade right now. Is the bar's position that if an attorney puts his head in the sand and looks the other way, yet takes client funds, that's not a disbarment case?
If they do it by design, as the case law instructs, we're not looking for a departure from that. If in the instance where there have been some of the cases like Gallo and even in Kanopka, where it talks about a disaster in terms of record keeping, and in those cases, this court has found that Wilson doesn't apply. No, we're not seeking a change in that law. But what we're concerned about is that there is going to be a natural progression here in enforcement by disciplinary authorities that takes the term knowing and tries to stretch that to its outer limits and its application where almost any conscious act could start coming before this court as a knowing violation. And that's what the bar is concerned about avoiding.
There have been countless instances where charges of knowing misappropriation have come before this court, where this court has found negligent misappropriation. This court knows the difference between the two.
We have no problem with this court in that regard. But what we are fearful of and concerned about, and maybe that concern is unsubstantiated, is that the attraction for regulatory authorities is to pursue and extend the application of the law to the logical extent that they perceive. And I'm not criticizing that, but I'm saying that the concept of pursuing to the fullest extent of the law in this context can create unintended results and bring before the court cases that this court would not have a problem with.
I don't want to get into detail about this case. I'm not suggesting what the ultimately result will be, but the Office of Attorney Ethics was not off the beam on this case. They at least had cause for filing these charges.
We took no position on the facts of this case in our brief. What we basically looked at was, because this case is bringing the issue up, we wanted to take the opportunity to bring our concerns to this court. And that's why our application was so limited. It wasn't to advocate for one party or against another. But I'm simply articulating the real concern that the members of our organization certainly have voiced, that they are fearful that while we have this knowing misappropriation standard without further clarification, that there is a concern that it will be pushed to its outer limits and the members will be subjected to more aggressive, enforcement by the disciplinary authorities. And let me make it clear that the reason we're before the court is because the court has addressed these issues exactly as you're suggesting, Justice, and the negligent misappropriation cases. We're not suggesting that those were wrong results. We're not suggesting to change that. We're not even advocating for an exception to Wilson, as we did in the Greenberg case. But what we're saying is, back in 83, when we sided with this court in Wilson, we cited for it, and we talked about these very specific standards and elements that were addressed in Wilson as the basis for, and in our belief, that we got it right in terms of what Wilson was saying. So we're not advocating with respect to a party. We're not suggesting the court has got it wrong. But we're asking the court to maybe consider that a clarification might be warranted at some point, perhaps. When that point is, I don't know. But our concern is that this issue may be ripe for looking at. That's simply what we're saying.
Thank you, Mr. Hilla. And thank you to everyone for the arguments today, and Ms. Wade for addressing. Courts in recess.